Welcome to episode 17 of Talking Impact Investing, a podcast about impact investing, ESG factors, and sustainability in business. I'm your host, Matej Sušec. This episode features a conversation with Mojca Markizeti, who is ESG and Climate Director at Deloitte in Central Europe. Mojca brings a unique perspective to this podcast with a diverse background of working in sustainability-related projects, as she started her career as a political activist, then worked in the Human Ombudsman office in Slovenia. She was also the head of project management for the United Nations Global Compact in Slovenia. Part of her career was also being a head of sustainability and regulatory affairs for Iskra Emeco, and she recently joined Deloitte this year of 2022, where she was also recently promoted to ESG and Climate Director for the Central Europe region. Deloitte is known as one of the big four accounting firms and one of the leading financial advisory and consulting firms in Europe as well. Mojca has throughout her career also been awarded with multiple awards for innovation projects on sustainability that she led or was a part of. One of the most notable of those is Green Penguin Initiative, which was awarded first prize in the category of supporting the sustainable transition at the European Entrepreneurship Awards. In this episode, we discuss what is the key driver of sustainable change, and there's not just one. We also discuss how recently approved European sustainability reporting standards will impact companies, and how can companies track ESG key performance indicators and embed the right practices in their strategy and organizational structure in the future. Without further ado, let's dive right in. Mojca, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation.
So tell us a little bit more about your story. How did you get involved with sustainability as a career?
Well, I grew up in a rather economically, socially, and environmentally degraded environment. I grew up in Jesenice, which is a heavy industry town in Slovenia. And at the same time, I'm really in love with nature and with life. So all of that together led me to start as an young activist, actually already from the high school and even earlier. And that led me to study economy and management because I figured out that through the economy, I can do, you know, perform biggest change. But then I started working at the Human Rights Ombudsman because those issues were really the most important to me. Realizing over 8 years of work how important and how interconnected everything is, how basically human rights issues are do start as environmental issues and vice versa and everything, and then started working on within several NGOs, also the United Nations Global Compact. I was leading the Slovenian network, and then moved to the corporations where I was consulting to corporations and also working really intensively for one corporation for 7 years, so sustainable development. And I can say now I'm really skilled, well-trained, and having over 20 years of experience in building sustainability strategies for cities, for companies, for SMEs. I'm also an innovator. I got over 7 international awards for innovations in terms of sustainability, in terms of digital solutions supporting sustainable development goals and so on. So yes, I've been around, but still really looking forward to everything that is to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And so many amazing achievements. So congratulations. And I got to follow up with this question. So working for Human Rights Ombudsman Office in politics with NGOs, now in public sector, achieving all those amazing awards, what are your biggest takeaways and who do you see as a key actor when it comes to making changes in sustainable development? Would that be governments? Would that be companies? Would that be people themselves or everyone combined?
Yes, Matej, thank you for the question. The key actor, the key factor for the success is synergy, is working together. It's listening to each other and really working close towards achieving the goals. That's the only solution, the only possible approach. You will never have top-notch knowledge in a real sector because it's being developed in academia and in institutes and everything. And you will never be able to lead the world through the real sector because it's being led by the politics, by the policymakers. But then in the end, you know that we often say, or I say it often, that we used to live in society, but now we live in economy. So the economy is the driver, is the key force, it's the most powerful force for change. It can happen fastest, it can happen with the biggest impact. So this is where we need to drive, but working together is the only solution. And that's also, I'm really happy that finally we are in a moment of time where we have this agreement with all the important players. So the policymakers, the academia, the public society, and the economy basically are synchronized towards the changes that need to happen and are working together. So things are moving rather fast, I would say now. It's also one of the reasons why we have a bit of a chaos and anxiety in all the stakeholders, but it's going to evolve for the best of all, I think.
So touching a little bit more on the side of the policymakers, EU has recently approved the final version of European Sustainability Reporting Standards, which is supposed to cover 4 times as many companies in terms of ESG disclosures requirements. And so can you tell us more, what are some of the major implications and what companies will have to follow them?
Yes. Well, EU public about a month ago, the CSRD was finally confirmed and adopted by the European Parliament. And in the next week, then the IFRAC issued the final version of the reporting standards, which are still to be confirmed by June 23. Like you already mentioned, these standards are in power and in scope much bigger than everything we've had before. At this point, I would like to say that Europe is not the only region following that. Basically, all the reporting standards, the international one, the United States one, all of them are developing in terms of incorporating sustainable development goals, KPIs, measurements. Yeah. So we're not the only ones. We maybe just are a little bit more ambitious in terms of having these standards, bringing transparency for the purposes of the capital markets, as well as also for all the other stakeholders. Yeah. So this is where maybe there's a bit of a difference on the European region. So these standards are extraterritorial. It means they don't stop within the EU borders, but for all the companies doing business in some certain thresholds within the European Union or being within the European Union physically with one of the branches or sub-companies or anything similar to that will have to follow these standards. The standards are even more larger in scope than you mentioned. Basically, if before about 10,000 companies needed to report something about sustainability because we did not have a really clear set guidelines, now there will be around 60,000 companies that summarizes to about 75% of the European economy. And the other 25% of the economy will be included into that through the value chains. Because what's demanded from the companies is that they work on sustainable development throughout their whole value chains, okay? Throughout their upstream and downstream value chains. Every company will have to report on environmental, social, and governance KPIs. There's about 1,114 data points actually that will have to be disclosed. Out of that, for the starting year, around 350 is mandatory. This legislation is the first phase of legislation and will be accompanied by other legislations such as Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive. And then also the taxonomy is enlarging its scope and its power. And then also the CBAM mechanism, so the carbon border adjust investment mechanism, which is also basically a regulation saying that everything coming into the European Union needs to cover all the expenses of carbon footprint outside, that is maybe creating outside. So we're here talking about the strategic independence of Europe, or of what is the responsibility, or what's the negative impacts that European companies are having in other regions of the world, and that needs to be measured, and it needs to be paid, it needs to be corrected, and so on. One other thing extremely important is, and I would really like all the companies to know that, is that this reporting will need to be integrated reporting. So if company now had a financial report that was revised by the statutory auditors and so on, and then sustainability report that was more or less. Well, some companies really did well and really sincerely did well and also invest. But let's say greenwashing is still a huge, huge problem. So that's now over. This era is over because a report will need to be integrated. It means one document, which is digital form documents with traceability figures. And it's in one document, it's financial report, management report, and sustainability report. And it needs to be seen in the financial figures what you're mentioning within the sustainability report. So the risks and opportunities that you're addressing in sustainability report somehow needs to be mirrored into financial report, which is exactly what is requested also from the capital markets. I don't know if you know, but the Carbon Trust has published a report saying still flying blind. So the investors are not yet able to read from the reports what is good investment and what is not. So this is what we have to major change. And this integrated report will have to be mandatory revised. So the limited assurance stamp will need to be on every single of these reports. So financial year 24 is the first year of compliance for the big corporations with over 500 employees, and then financial year 25 with for all the rest, same for all with 200 and more employees.
Excellent. And I would think that many companies are now asking themselves, what is the process of data gathering for the due diligence process, for reporting processes? What is your advice on the key performance indicators that they should track and that should be embedded within the firm?
My advice would be that basically year 2023, which is actually the day after tomorrow, practically starting, to be a sort of devoted to development of the methodologies and tools. It needs to be spent in assessing the gaps of what we have and what needs to happen, because the year 2024 is actually already compliance year. And also for the companies who are not yet in the compliance scope for 2024, it will be requested for them by banks, it will be requested for them by larger companies, by their customers, and so on and so on. So it's not to be waited. That would be my main message to the companies. Please don't wait. We need to look at that as a growth opportunity, as business development opportunity. And the biggest mistake that companies can do is, because we talked so much now about the legislation that is happening. We talked about the legislation, but there's reasons for this legislation beyond the legislation itself. So for the companies, my advice would be not to do it through the angle of compliance, but to do it through the angle of the business development, of strategy development, of growth, of managing your risks better, because that's the main driver, that's the main reason why we have this. It was seen from all the stakeholders of the society, the capital markets, the financial markets, the policy makers, the general publicity, it was seen that the companies are not measuring, are not managing their risks properly, and this is why we have a huge issue within the economy. So if we continue to do that, we're going to break. So this is why we need to, this is why the big legislation is coming up and companies need to address their climate-related risks in both ways, in how these risks are targeting them and they need to adopt, and how they are one of the reasons that these risks exist and they need to mitigate and correct their business models to manage that.
So when we talk about business models, what have you noticed are the biggest changes in today's era because of the drive of sustainability and because of the commitment of some companies towards the net zero goals? And maybe what are some of the challenges that those companies are facing that are trying to already achieve net zero goals from your experience?
Well, the biggest challenges that the companies are having is definitely that we can all say that now everything is happening at once. So at once we're developing the legislation and the standards, at once we're developing the strategies, the tools, the methodologies, the technology driving all that behind. In terms of some manufacturers, you know, we're changing big things in terms of material science and so on. So the key challenge is that now we're having all at once, because there were a few companies that really were pioneering in every economy. We had companies pioneering and doing the proper great things already 10 years ago, in the last 10 years, in the last decade, but not most of the companies. So because of everything happening at once, we really need to now develop completely new skills. There's been new occupations developed within the companies. New knowledge needs to be created on all levels, within the policymakers, within the companies, within us. So it's quite an interesting era. And looking from our perspective, this is going to be the biggest business transformation of our professional lives. We will not see anything similar. And the biggest anxiety that we have is that we only have this one chance to do it properly. So nobody has done it before. Now we need to do it. It's not yet clear how to do it. You cannot learn from somebody how to do it, because nobody has really done it as a whole before. We need to do it as a society, as an economy now. And this is creating a huge, huge anxiety and panic within everybody. And it's still quite a big percentage of people involved, because in the end, it's everything is depending on the individual, on people who are driving it. Yeah. So there's still quite a big percentage of individuals on important decision making, chairs, who still have this skepticism. So what do I benefit? Do I really do it? Do I wait? We can wait. It's not us. If we do it in Slovenia and nobody else will do it, it doesn't matter. So we might as well as not do it. There's still a lot of these debates going around. And then at the same time, what I see is lack of knowledge on the top level positions within the companies, and also in the operations. We don't have this match yet for the majority of companies. I'm now talking about 80% of the economy, not for some companies who do have that. That's really great. But for the majority of companies, we don't have the match that this knowledge of these strategies and everything is existent within the operational management that needs to do it and within the top management. Either exists within the operational management or in the top, and it's not connected. And this is what it needs to happen. We now have this one year, the 2023, where we all together responsible. We are jointly responsible that we create this knowledge, that we work over our hours and volunteer in every corner that we have, that we educate the society, that we educate the managers, that we educate the key decision makers about those things, that they will, because they will be responsible. That's also what the legislation is bringing. It's bringing a responsibility of top management. So they are responsible. They need to sign. The responsibility for them is theirs to develop the strategy, the KPIs, the measurement, and to achieve the goals. Or if they don't, they need to report why not. and based on the achievement of the green transition goals and decarbonization goals, this is going to impact their access to finances, their access to talents, their access to partners, their access to market, to buyers, to customers. So in a few years, everything is going to interconnect in a loop. So we'll have this joint responsibility, the policymakers, us as a consultant companies, banks as well, also banks as being the first in the row as being part of the financial markets. They have partially a responsibility to educate them, not only to, you know, push the responsibility towards their portfolios, but also to motivate them, to educate them, to understand them, and to support them where they have challenges. And there will be a lot of challenges.
I think you really got your point across of how important taking responsibility and developing that internal knowledge is. My question would be in regards to sort of like company structure. How should ESG or sustainability be embedded? Would that be like one department or like multiple departments working towards it together? What are your thoughts on that?
Sustainability is really not a tool that you buy or an investment that you make within two top experts and then it's done. Sustainability is in every corner of the company, in every corner of business processes, in every corner of business development, portfolio developments, product developments, innovation. That's all sustainability. And this is how we need to see it. It needs to be cross-functionally. It needs to be really inclusive. So inclusivity needs to be one of the main drivers. In these teams, we need to, of course, invite people who are motivated to do that, but we also need to include people who are really skeptical, because if we don't, they're going to block all the changes. So sustainability is actually a superb opportunity to practice your change management and innovation management within the companies. And that's also one of the first things that I really needed to learn and gain all the certificates that I was able then to perform sustainability within the companies. The biggest mistake is that when companies are sort of, you know, pushing this responsibility of sustainability from sector to sector, it starts maybe in marketing because they see it could be great for the you know, business opportunities out there. Then this marketing director over 1 year says, that's not marketing. Yes, we will work together, but it's not our responsibility. Then they see, oh, it's legal issues. So now we need to compliance. So then the compliance director gets this on the table. And then this compliance director over 1 year, they say, it's not compliance. We're the tick in a box. It's basically business development, it's strategy and something, you know, and then the company loses 3 years. In these 3 years, so this company could do better and could grow and became more resilient and find new business opportunities through that. Maybe others have already done it and they're now behind. So that's really what would be the best: build cross-sector, multifunctional, inclusive teams, diverse teams, build knowledge, get help, get support, and be fast, because the past 5 years was time where we could do it on our own and, you know, rapidly, step by step. Now it's now we need to do it not out of the box approach, but no box approach. So really be innovative in what we can do. And detached from the business development is the worst thing that can happen, because it will not create any value for the company.
Moitza, at this point, I would like to thank you for joining Talking Impact Investing. This was a great conversation. So many important topics and so many things that businesses should listen to in order to prepare for the future, right? To be successful. And so thank you for your time and best of luck.
Thank you, Matej.
Thank you for staying with us until the very end. You can stay up to date with the upcoming episodes by subscribing. And if you found any useful information, feel free to leave a 5-star review and follow Talking Impact Investing Podcast on social media.